Welcome to Press the Issue, a podcast from Master WP, your source for industry insights for WordPress professionals. Get show notes, transcripts, and more information about the show at masterwp.com/press the issue. Work-life balance isn't a new topic, especially since 2020. But the traditional methods of focus, relation, and de-stressing don't work for everyone. Nyesha and Rob have their own approaches to burnout and breaks.
Hey, Rob, how are you doing today?
Hey, Nyesha, very good. How about you?
Doing well. Really excited to talk to you today about, these two articles that we did. Breaking and taking breaks and vacations are my favorite things in life. So just really excited to talk to you. And I just wanted to ask you a few questions about the article that you wrote. It was titled Vacations Make a Business Stronger. And first, what inspired you to write this article?
So, this concept for me dates back probably 15 years, right? In the near term, what I've discovered, both when I was running, kind of like a very small agency with like one or two people, and now all the way up to we have, 18 or 19 people, what I've discovered is that by essentially forcing yourself to exit work for a significant amount of time, maybe a week or two, where you're truly not checking email, not checking Slack, it's not a working vacation. It is truly like you are out of the picture, right? It really forces me to run a more efficient business, right? So what I kind of joke around about with my family is like my business is way more efficient when I'm on vacation than when I'm actually here, right? And obviously that's like intended to be a little bit of a joke, but it's really true because that compels me to train and systematize, right? And I think the trap that a lot of people, whether they're business owners or employees of a business, get stuck in is they, for various reasons that we can talk about, perceive themselves to be indispensable to the business that they run or that they're part of, right? And, while you can be important to the business, being indispensable to the business can actually kind of be a very unhealthy mindset because then you can never let go. Not only does that stress you out individually, but it also, in a lot of ways, prevents you from leveling up, right? Because part of leveling up your business is actually taking that owner or the initial founding team out of the equation for some of the important business operations, right? So if you're never willing to do that, then you're kind of stuck because you can only do so much as one individual human being. And eventually, if you do want that business to grow and get bigger, you got to be able to train, delegate, document. And in my experience, vacations are a really fun way to force you to do that. And so that was kind of the near-term inspiration. And going farther back, I've always been kind of in that, digital nomad, four-hour work week mindset. I don't work a four-hour work week. I don't necessarily endorse everything in that book and in that sort of, worldview. But one thing that I do think is really smart and sensible is this idea that, you shouldn't be waiting for retirement or for some distant point in the future to enjoy your life and do the things that you want to do. So I think, what I take away from a lot of that, 4-hour work week perspective is not that you should literally be working 1 hour a day, but that you should also not be deferring your life until some point in the future, right? So, a lot of people say, well, I'm going to work really hard in my 20s or work really hard for the next 5 years or whatever that is. And then I'll go to, this vacation destination. Then I'll, do this thing or that thing that is kind of like on my bucket list. And of course, work has a tendency to be infinite if you allow it to be, right? And what a lot of people discover is that someday keeps getting pushed back, right? So the philosophy that I try to take is like you know, like you got to do stuff now, right? You know, like I have a son who's 8 years old, and you know, we've done a lot of fun things and fun vacations in the 8 years of his life that we could have easily pushed back and said, oh, well, no, we'll do that when he's older, when we have more money, when we have more time, whatever, right? But, you know, you got to sometimes, like, do the thing in life that you actually want to do. And I think, you know, that applies to vacations. It applies to other major life decisions. It applies to, like, moving to the city you want to live in, right? All these things that they are really easy to put off. And, you know, when you do that repeatedly, you end up, you know, being much older than you expected to be when you finally get around to these things. And I think that's just a negative outcome for everybody. You know, this philosophy basically is like, you know, you got to have a business and a job that allows you to actually live life too, and actually supports you those other things you want to do, as opposed to just being like work for work's sake, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it totally does. I want to just talk to you about two things you said that were just, they stood out to me the most just now. You brought up that, you know, people think that they're indispensable versus they should think they're important. And that really stood out to me because when I was in, like, fresh out of college and working. So when I was in the insurance industry, they worked me like I was indispensable. They made sure I knew. How much do you think, like, and that was a very, very toxic industry to be in. How much do you think, like, jobs play in people, like, working themselves like that to the point where they think they can't take a vacation?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the individual situation how malicious the boss is actually being by doing that. But I think that there is clearly a, you know, there in multiple industries, there is an industry-wide philosophy that, you know, basically you want to devote your life to this. You know, when I think about, I think Silicon Valley and Wall Street are both, you know, very typical in that way. But obviously, there's tons of other industries. You know, you mentioned your previous job. I also see this in, like, people who get jobs as, like, management consultants or, you know, in some law firms, stuff like that. So, like, you know, pretty much any job could fall prey to this. I think it's good to enjoy your work and feel important. But when someone says that you are so indispensable that you can't take vacation, I think that, you know, now has shifted over into, you know, a toxic situation, as you said. You know, I think the way that I turn that around is, like, you're so indispensable that I don't want to lose you to burnout or to the next job that actually offers you a better work-life balance, right? So when you think about what they're doing, you know, they are, in some cases, and again, like, you know, you never know how, like, conscious of a decision this is, because you can also just kind of, like, adopt this mindset without even realizing it if you're around people who think this way for a really long time. But, you know, the idea that, like, if you're not the only person who can do what you do, you're going to get replaced. Like, I hear that a lot in, you know, very competitive, like, legal, you know, law firms and stuff like that. They'll say, you have to be the rainmaker. You have to be the best. Otherwise, you know, it's a dog eat dog world out there. Right. So that's an element of it. Right. Is, like, are your fellow employees going to compete against you and beat you because you're not enough of a workaholic. Right. And then, of course, there's the manager who is pressuring you into doing extra work, you know, and almost giving you these, like, little, like, nuggets of praise, but they're also kind of manipulative in a way.
Oh, right? Yeah.
So, you know, I think one thing that the last 2 years have done for employees that has been valuable is, you know, we all have a lot more options now with, you know, remote work, with, you know, relatively tight job market where it is kind of like an employee's market as opposed to an employer's market. So I think, you know, you're seeing a lot of people switch jobs because they're now saying, well, this is just not a good lifestyle for me anymore. And there's other options out there. So I think that, you know, for me, you know, I've been happy to see that. Obviously, I think we're ahead of the curve on a lot of those work-life balance things at our company. So we've really benefited and thrived from kind of like already being there. But I also look to, you know, people who are in other industries or friends or other people that I know. And I'm like, wow, I'm glad for you guys that you can, you know, achieve or compel your employer to do better. Right. I mean, I think, you know, to go back to your original question, there definitely are people who are just straight up manipulative, but also I think there are people who don't realize there's another way to operate. Right. And, you know, those people who are well-meaning, but still stuck in this harmful mindset, you know, can in some cases be just as harmful as somebody who is, you know, actively manipulating you in a malicious way.
Gotcha. And, you know, as a former workaholic, as I just admitted, it took me a while to get comfortable taking vacation days. Was it like that for you? Or how long did it take you to get comfortable, like actually vacationing and breaking?
So I have the dubious distinction of hardly ever having had a real job. So when I graduated from college, my first job was at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the major metro newspaper in Atlanta. And it was like a killer job on paper. But I quickly discovered that I didn't really like working in an office in that, you know, type of situation. Mm-hmm. Newspapers were kind of in a weird place. This was 2005. So like I was hired as a web guy, but I was also doing journalism and writing and stuff like that. And kind of aspired to that. And interestingly now, mm-hmm. you know, 15 years later, here we are running a magazine about websites, right? you know, I kind of said, like, I don't really like this, you know, atmosphere. Like, I have always been a freelancer. I could still be a freelancer. I actually turned down an equivalent job offer at the Washington Post and decided to freelance, which going back, looking back, I probably should have taken that job and just done both. Like, I probably would give myself that advice if I were, you know, talking to my 21-year-old self again. But, you know, fast forward and obviously, you know, it's worked out and I'm happy with, you know, the career path that I've taken. You know, in the very short period of time that I had to like count PTO, I was like, okay, this is like super stressful. And like, you know, especially in the world of newspapers, like they work every day. So like, they were like, well, you're mm-hmm. the lowest ranking person. You can't go home for Thanksgiving. Well, you're the lowest ranking person. You can't go home for Christmas. Right. And this was, my family was in New York and I was in Atlanta. So I was like, that's actually like a pretty big deal for me. Right. So, yeah. You know, none of that is unusual. It's all par for the course, right? But that is, you know, an experience that I was like, I'm just not into this. And if I have this other option, and, you know, at that young age and back in like, you know, 2005, 2006, like it was pretty rare for someone to actually have the option to like basically be a digital nomad immediately. But because I was doing web development, I was freelancing, like I was already kind of in that world. I was able to basically kind of like flip the switch on that very early in my career. Mm-hmm. So in that context, I was always a bigger vacationer than average, I think. But what I will say is that while it wasn't so much training myself, it definitely was training my clients, right? You know, my clients would be in the mindset of like, well, are you going to be, you know, checking email while you're out, or are you going to be available at this time or that time? And it's like, okay, well, I had to figure out, especially as a solo freelancer, like how to set those boundaries and how to convey to people like a level of trust, but also a level of unavailability, right? And those two things, mm-hmm. you know, especially in that sort of 2005, 2008 world where there was just way less of like the digital nomad, you know, remote work stuff happening. Mm-hmm. That was a very challenging thing. And, you know, there definitely are clients who just chose not to work with me, I think because of that. But the ones who got it and stuck around and who I was able to set expectations with, you know, were fantastic. And actually some of them are still working with us, you know, on client services today, which is really cool. And I think, you know, a nice sort of piece of evidence that you can have a life and take care of your clients, right? And I think there definitely is a mindset among some people and companies out there that like those two things are incompatible. So I think we've, you know, while I agree that it's not always easy, like I think they are, they can be compatible with one another.
Thank you for listening up to this point. Press the Issue by MasterWP is sponsored by LearnDash. Your expertise makes you money doing what you do. Now let it make you money teaching what you do. To create a course with LearnDash, visit learndash.com. Now, back to the podcast.
Gotcha, gotcha. So what types of vacations would you not recommend someone take?
Good question. So obviously, like, the vacation where you don't turn off email is not ideal. That being said, you know, there are nuances to that, right? Like, we have a couple employees who are, you know, working from other locations for like a month this summer. You know, like, somebody wants to go to a different city to, you know, help out, you know, their parents or something, who are, you know, going through health issues, stuff like that. And it's like, you know, that is not really a vacation, but it's not also like 100% work, right? So that's kind of like a hybrid thing. You know, and then, you know, I think on the other end of that is like, I'm going to go on a, you know, sabbatical or hiatus for 6 months or a year. I think that's cool, but not always conducive to actually running like a client services business. So that's one that I've never done. Not to say that there's nothing, that there's not benefits to that, but I have not yet done anything along the lines of like the extremely long sabbatical or hiatus. The vacations that I take today are mostly like 1 to 2 week family trips, right? So what I try to do is, you know, make sure everything's lined up. The team has what they need, you know, and then when I come back from vacation, I just don't change that. And whoever was doing the stuff while I was on vacation continues to do the stuff, right? So after you do that a few times, you know, you end up with, like my most recent vacation, you know, we barely had to really change anything, you know, and I almost am at a place where I could just not show up and you guys would just kind of do everything, you know what to do without my direct advice. And I think that is actually a really healthy place for the business to be. Obviously, I love being involved, but I also don't want to be a roadblock ever for anybody on the team.
Gotcha, gotcha. Are you sure the reason you won't take 6 months or a year off is because you're afraid that when you get back, it'll say Niaisha WP instead of Master WP?
I mean, you technically have the ability to do that right now on the site, so I trust you. But maybe I'll do that hiatus, and we'll see what happens when we come back. I think I think BTS WP is probably more likely in terms of the new name you would choose for the company, though.
Oh, copyright! They would probably sue me.
Yep. Well, when I'm, you know, on a tropical island and I'm getting legal notices from BTS, I'll know that you finally did that one that you've been planning for so long.
You know, they say never meet your heroes.
Yep.
And that's not the way I want to meet them.
So, speaking of BTS, they recently took a break and inspired you to write an article about taking breaks, right? So, you know, I think, you know, it's always nice to see, like, the high-powered celebrities doing this type of stuff because, like, to some degree, like, they can do it because they're, you know, multimillionaires. But to some degree, you know, people who are in that celebrity zone are often just as pressured and cross-pressured and more so as, like, the average person, right? Like, they don't have more time in their day. Mm-hmm. They still have the same 24 hours. They have a lot more pressure from a lot more directions and a lot more stakeholders. So, yes. You know, it's a big deal to see somebody say like, hey, I actually am putting life ahead of work, life ahead of like the art that I'm doing and all these things because, you know, it makes them, I think, come back stronger. So I'm curious to hear from you. You know, you talked about burnout in that article. And one of the things that I'm always trying to figure out is, you know, how do you handle and differentiate between work burnout and life burnout, right? Like, even if work is like literally perfect, that doesn't mean that you're not going to have, you know, big issues outside of work that are nobody's fault, but like medical issues, having to move, having to do all this other stuff. Like, you know, how do you think about those two things? And, you know, how do you handle life burnout differently than work burnout?
So I definitely think that sometimes they can blur. And yes, that's going to vary by like what you do, like what industry you're in, or, you know, if you work from home like I do, or if you work in an office, or, you know, if you're working on the road. I think the big difference between both of them is what you can disconnect from. In my opinion, work burnout is easier to disconnect from than life burnout because, you know, just simply saying it's life, it's something that's always happening. If it's medical issues, you can't really break from that. If it's, you know, family issues, you can't really break from that, especially a need to move. If you work from home, that is a work and life issue. Work is just a little bit more doing some of the things you talked about, like turning your, making sure you're turning off emails, making sure you're turning off Slack, turning off your phone, taking that break away, you know, not answering calls, things like that, versus life. You know, once I shut my computer down, I'm living life, but I'm also living life while I'm at work. So, just the major difference in what you can, get away from. It's always been interesting to me to hear people either say themselves or talk about people who they just don't want to go home after work. They work outside of the house and they're like, I'm just dreading going home. And they're volunteering for extra hours. They're like, I just don't want to go home. Don't want to go home. And I had never experienced that before. I never want to. That was just unheard of to me. I'm like, it's not that all of my jobs have been bad. I've had really great jobs. It's just that I've never been a person that wants to work that bad where I will just forsake my life. But doing work from home, that feeling is a little different. And for me, recently it was switched. Like, work was going great. And every time I did something at work, I was very happy and I was very proud of it. But when it came time to shut my computer down at 5, I was like, oh, I have to deal with life. And it was just, it was a new feeling, and I know a lot of people were probably dealing with this as a result of COVID because so many people are working from home. At my past programming job, this was the first time some people had ever worked from home, and they had been working at the job for 20, 30 years. So I think, you know, they're completely different. Sometimes they can blur, and sometimes they can change in your life depending on what's going on.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as you said, having more control over work is a good thing, you know, and my experience has been like, you know, for better or worse, like, work is really the thing that needs to flex when life requires more time and energy, right? Mm-hmm. And that could be you have to be out to do something that is, you know, a medical necessity. It could be that you're not sleeping as well. It could be that you know, you have a new child or even a new pet that's changing your schedule. Like, these things are all like, you know, varying degrees of importance, right? But, you know, all things that can mess with your work schedule. And, you know, I think one of the somewhat unconventional approaches that I've tried to take myself and tried to apply at our company is like, work should really be the thing that is flexible because life sometimes is not flexible. Right. And I think, you know, a lot of companies say the exact opposite. They're like, oh, well, that's great. Well, as soon as you're done with your 60-hour week where we, you know, stress you out and, you know, manipulate you all week, then you can go home and deal with those important family issues. Right. And I think, you know, obviously that at the extremes, you know, lends itself to like complete burnout or kind of like system failure. But, you know, my view is like, work's still going to be here when we get back. And you know, we've even talked about this and we've talked about it with other employees. It's like, you know, like this deadline, like can change. Like we kind of made this deadline up. Like we're building a website, right? Like it's very rare that we are in a situation where there is a deadline that is actually associated with like a unchangeable physical event or something like that. Like sometimes there will be like, hey, we really want to send this press release on this day, right? But that's pretty much the extent of, you know, like the strict deadlines. And most of the stuff we do, like, you know, if we really needed to take a week off from the podcast or the newsletter, like, it wouldn't be the end of the world, right? And I'd rather, you know, allow ourselves to do that than set, you know, what are effectively arbitrary deadlines. And, you know, there are some jobs where that's not true, right? Like, sometimes you have to, like, show up at court on a certain day as a lawyer and stuff like that. But, you know, especially in our line of work, like, it's pretty rare that we have true immovable deadlines. So, you know, I like to make sure that people know, like, hey, like, if you're sick, like, you shouldn't be working through illness to the point that it's going to hurt you later. If you need to go attend to your parents or your kids or any other loved ones, like, you got to be able to do that. Like, that stuff matters, you know, and it matters, I think, significantly more than, like, you know, launching that site on that certain day or, you know, publishing that article on that certain day in at least like 90% of cases. And then if there really is something that's like immutable or unchangeable, like that's why we have 18 people and not two, right? So somebody can fill in for you and help you out. And we try to build a culture of that, you know, sort of ability to fill in for each other, which I think really helps in the big picture as well.
I agree.
So I'm curious, you know, a lot of people, when they talk about burnout, they say, well, I started meditating and it really helped. I, you know, got this mindfulness app for my phone and, you know, now I do that for half an hour every morning. And while I've done that stuff and it's been interesting, I've never really gotten into it to the extent that I feel like it is a long-term like habit or solution for me. I may just not be like a super Zen guy. I don't know, but I'm curious, you know, if somebody says like, I tried that stuff and I'm just not into it. Like, what are the other ways that people can achieve similar levels of focus, relaxation, and just kind of like distance from stress, you know, without turning to those like meditation and mindfulness type approaches?
People honestly and actually ask me this all the time. They're like, yeah, I tried yoga. People are telling me I should go run a 5K or a 10K. People are telling me I should just go drink. I tell people, like, do you want to do that? Like, this is going to sound crazy or, well, this is going to sound like unheard of, but you should do something you like to do. And that blows people's mind. They're like, what? Do something I want? Yes, you should do something you want to do. I am not going to learn yoga when I can go to the movies and have the same effect. I mean, not on my physical health, but, you know, if it's something I want to do just to relax, I tell people I do simple things. I love cooking. Sometimes I will try out a new recipe. Where we live, it doesn't have the most diverse restaurants. We usually have to drive either to another state or to a major city to get like some really good food. So I will take it upon myself instead of wasting the gas to try to cook something that's different, different from my culture or where I eat at. That really soothes me. That takes my mind off things. I'm just focusing on cooking and I'm excited because I get a good, hopefully good meal when it's done. It's the same thing with movies. Like I go to the movies, I get to turn my phone off. So no one in life or work can reach me for a little, you know, for at least a couple hours. It's dark, it's quiet, and it's just me and a new movie experience, reading books, things like that. People are so obsessed these days with, like you said, the new fancy, I need to do mindfulness, I need to meditate. And it's like, one, they may not know how to do it, so they jump into it and they're like, oh, this doesn't work. Or two, it's not something that they enjoy. So I always stress to people, don't get too caught up in work or life and forget your joy and forget things that make you happy. Everyone should, and everyone does. People will say, well, I really don't have hobbies. Even if doing nothing is what you like, sometimes I like doing nothing. If I can sit for 30 minutes and just breathe, I love it. If that's your thing, do that.
Taking naps is a legitimate substitution, I think, for meditation and mindfulness. Yes. And that is okay. and it's interesting, yes. You know, like I also, and I think, you know, maybe this is like a sort of growing up in a house that always has like lots of food cooking and good smells. And like, that's kind of where this comes from. And I think that's kind of a youth experience that we probably both share, is that like food as a activity is something that really, I always get a ton of just like personal value and happiness from that. Yes. Right. And it's not like you have to go like, you know, you're not like going out and like intentionally binging on unhealthy food. It's like you're really like having a food experience, right? And yes. You know, to me, that you know, most of my favorite experiences center around that to some degree, right? And I think, you know, like you said, you know, cooking something new at home, even like going out for like a really different, fun, nice meal, if you can, like, to me, like, those are experiences that are significantly more pleasurable and fulfilling than, you know, like you said, like meditating or exercising and stuff like that. Like for me, like I basically have the most efficient exercise like routine that I can possibly achieve, because it's just not something that I enjoy doing. But some people are like, oh, I went for a 7-mile run and I have a, you know, runner's high and I feel great. And like, you know, it's just different for everybody. But, you know, I think one of the takeaways from what you just said is like, it's okay if you're not doing the stuff that like creates good Instagram photos, right? Like mindfulness, exercise, right? And it's okay if you do that stuff, as long as you actually like it, right? But, you know, there's more than one way to sort of get to that, you know, kind of zen-like state, and it's not always the actual like meditation and exercise and stuff like that.
Yeah, and some of those things are pretty, you know, I like them. I've tried some, like just my Apple Watch telling me to breathe. When I first bought an Apple Watch and it told me to breathe, I was just, I laughed for like 3 hours straight. I had to. I was like, now the watch is telling me to breathe. Like, is it going to tell me to tie my shoes next? And I actually did it. And I realized it worked. I felt really good. I was like, just, all I did was focus on breathing for a minute. And it really did take my mind off everything. And I did feel a little better. And it might be, you know, Apple just, you know, just in my mind marketing to me to buy another watch. But it really did make me feel good. So sometimes those things, they're okay. They're pretty good. But again, just, you know, make sure you like it. If I didn't like that, I would not have done that again. I would have told my watch to leave me alone.
Yeah, I will say the Apple Watch has grown on me. I got one like 6-7 months ago. And, you know, the fitness alerts, you know, and a handful of the other tools, like I really don't use it for that much other than telling time. But the fitness stuff has definitely grown on me. And I do use that regularly now and appreciate it. So that I used to have a Fitbit many years ago, and I think, you know, this is basically the upgraded version of that. So I'm surprised how much I like it, because I was kind of like, I don't want another device, right? That was kind of my mindset for a long time. But what I found is that I actually not only can use it for fitness, but I also got the one that has like a cell phone plan attached to it, so I can just not have my phone with me at all sometimes. You know, and I can still, you know, receive an emergency call or make an emergency call or whatever from the watch. And that's been a really nice change for me as well, because I think just not having the ability to, idly, almost like fidget with your phone is definitely a good life change.
Nice.
Speaking of fidgeting with phones, I have one final question for you. And, we are both, you know, using Twitter a lot lately for various reasons. And I will say that while I am usually not into social media for that, you know, the reason that I just described, like I'd rather, you know, kind of just force myself to do other things with my focus and with my time. I do think that, you know, social media has value, like in the context of sharing our articles and advertising for our company. Like we really are, I think it's a very effective method for us to do that. It's an effective method for us to kind of have comments on our articles. We are currently hiring a new developer, and that has already gone around Twitter a few times, and that's actually a really valuable thing. So And it's just fun sometimes, right? Like it is a fun way to interact when it works well, right? Obviously there's plenty of toxicity on social media that you want to avoid, but I'm not of the mindset that like you're better off never touching it, right? So what I'm curious is, how do you think about Twitter, social media? How do you personally handle your own sort of screen time and social media limits so that you can get the good parts of it without getting kind of sucked into the bad parts?
So I'm a social media mega user. I have Twitter, I have Instagram, I have TikTok, I have all the latest stuff that the kids are using these days. It is very easy. It's very easy to get sucked into like just any wormhole in any of those places because they have become more so education platforms. I mean, yes, for disinformation as well, but they're largely educational platforms. So you can get sucked into that. You can get sucked into drama, gossip, media, entertainment. So what I actually do is, as far as my professional account, I do have limits on what I tweet. Sometimes I think about it. And this is something, I guess growing up in a social media age, I didn't really have to think about when I was just a little younger. I just, hey, going to the park today. That's what you would do. But for me, I think what helped me is having so many eyes on my Twitter account now. I'm not going to say it makes me want to tweet. It does make me want to tweet less. But it makes me want to be more thoughtful. So I'm more thoughtful of having to be more thoughtful about my professional account has made me more thoughtful about all of my accounts. And I think you actually helped me out a lot when it was one time. What were we talking about? We were talking about the podcast and you were like, we just want to remember that whatever we put out there, it's there forever. And I was like, oh my gosh, I think he's talking about Twitter. And it made me want to be more mindful. So as a result, I don't post as much. But, there are people who, it's just their life to not post a lot, but they will like spend a lot of time on there like looking and consuming. And for that, I do a lot of muting. And if there's somebody I just know I'm going to get sucked into what they're doing, sometimes I do mute them. And it's not necessarily that they're doing something bad. If it's something that's going to distract me, I do mute them. And most social media platforms have the option to like mute temporarily or you can do it permanently. I just set boundaries for myself because I know at this point, after getting lost in so many social media like threads and trends, that it's easy to do. So just putting up those walls and I also just work it into, I don't work it in like physically writing it down into my regular schedule, but I just keep an eye on the clock. Sometimes I'm like, hey, I'll pop over to Twitter and see what's going on. And if 30 minutes have gone by and I'm still on Twitter, I'm like, oh no, this is too long. So it's something I've trained myself to do. It took a really long time, but that's typically how I handle social media. And I think it's, like I said, it's a great place for education. I live in my college town, the town I went to school at, and most of my friends have moved away. Social media is sometimes the only way I can really contact some of them. So very important to have that as a tool of communication, especially, in the age of COVID. But we still have to set those boundaries. If not, it can consume your life and that's not good.
Yes. And as you said, like it is a legitimate communication platform, right? And we even have like a neighborhood Facebook group that is very active because we need to communicate with each other about stuff. And it's an easy way to do that. And obviously like there were ways to do that in the past, but I think that a lot of these social media apps actually are the best and well-suited for that. But you also have to, not get sucked into the rabbit hole, right, as part of that. So, that's the balance. And like one of the things that I even do is like I try to not look at the algorithmic feeds, right? Like I'll just go to, hey, I want to look at this journalist's Twitter to see what they've been up to lately, right? Or, hey, I want to look at this Facebook group to see what's going on in my neighborhood, and try to stay away from the feeds because obviously those are the things that are, primed to distract you and suck you in. And there's just so many, bad incentives around that content. So Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, this has been excellent. And I think we should both go take a nice break now that we're done recording. And it is always a pleasure to hang out. And I look forward to chatting again soon.
Nice. Can't wait to talk again.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Press the Issue is a production of Master WP, produced by Ali Nimmons, hosted, edited, and musically supervised by Monet Davenport, and mixed and mastered by Teron Bullock. Please visit masterwp.com/pressTheIssue to find more episodes. Subscribe to our newsletter for more WordPress news at masterwp.com.